2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
Alright, welcome to Taco's Fast 40, presented to you, as always, by DFSArmy.com. If you'd like access to the cheat sheet that I'll be referencing on the podcast, along with access to all of our premium content for baseball and the NFL season that's about to start, and golf, and all of our other stuff, use the link in the description of this video or this podcast, and use promo code TACO on signup for a lifetime 20% off. It'll support the pod and let them know that we sent ya. Okay, so for the second time this year, we're headed to Bristol, Tennessee for the smallest track on the NASCAR circuit. Bristol is a half-mile oval that has progressive banking, and as a result of this progressive banking, the outside line has been the preferred line historically, but as we saw with the spring race here, they added the substance PGI that we've seen at a few other tracks, also known as VHT, or just a sticky substance like resin, that's added to the track to add more lanes that people can race on. And it didn't really do a whole lot. It's done the same thing pretty much every single time it's been used. People are scared to use it at first. Then someone will start going on it and people will start getting on it, seeing that it's fast. Then it'll wear off and eventually it won't matter towards the end of the race and everyone will just go back to the preferred line. Last race was actually kind of different since we had, similar to last year at this race, a big rainout. And that ended up, I guess, wiping it off of the surface. But they added, or they ended up applying more right before the race, when it had been rescheduled to Monday. And it definitely made a difference. It allowed for some more passing, at least in the beginning of the race, before it started to wear off. And with this being a night race, one thing we know about night races is that there's going to be more grip on the track, since the track will be colder, and it'll be getting colder as the night wears on. So the track will just have plenty of grip along with the resin that's added, but I'm pretty sure it'll run similar to last race, where the lower groove is an option in the first half of the race or so, then it wears off and everybody starts using the upper groove. So when we look at this track from a fantasy perspective, we see the 500 laps, and we know that this is a complete dominator's kind of track, but using the positional scoring summary, we found there's actually a lot of value that comes from the very back of the field, since this track has a very large attrition rate. So we've seen people starting 36th or worse actually do pretty good. They hit 40 fantasy points 28% of the time, and that's not a bad number. We also see that guys starting between 16th and 25th, they hit 40 fantasy points 40% of the time. Like most other tracks, most of your fantasy points are going to come from the top five starting positions. And people on the pole specifically average 71 fantasy points and 85 lead laps, which would definitely lead you to picking the guy on the pole. But this week you're going to want many dominators. As little as two, but as many as four dominators this week, since there are 500 laps to go around. Fast laps are kind of random, but lead laps, we can kind of guess who's going to get all of the lead laps, just guys that are fast and usually starting in the top 10. Although we do have a few studs this week, they're starting in the back, so that'll change the strategy a lot just for everybody. We've got Jimmy Johnson starting in 21st, Kyle Busch starting in 18th, and Kevin Harvick starting in 29th. So everyone's going to be going after those guys and matching them with as many dominators as possible, because those guys have place differential locked in, but also have that huge dominator upside, which is so important here. So one thing I can tell right away is that there's going to be a bit more punting, like low ball punting this week than normal, since people will want to try and cram in four high salary guys. The other option is you go three high salary guys, and then you go Erik Jones, and you hope that he does something off the pole. It's really risky, though, because this is the first week in a long time where we've had a really questionable pole sitter. You've got Larson right on the outside looking to take his spot. And if you look at the higher dollar drivers this week, they're a little more expensive than usual. We've got three drivers that are over the $10,500 mark, and Kyle Busch is almost $11,000. And when you combine that with the high attrition rate of Bristol, it actually makes a little sense to punt all the way down to the bottom and pick a guy starting in dead last. If he survives, we've seen it here oftentimes with guys like Cole Witt and Jeffrey Earnhardt. If you just start in the back and survive, you're going to have a good day and finish in the lower 20s just by not crashing. So that's going to be something to consider as well. Let's get right into the lineup here. We've got Erik Jones and Kyle Larson in the front row. Erik Jones, teammate of Truex, who has been just dominating this season. He hasn't had quite the domination, but we've seen him lead a fair share of laps. He's led 50 laps this year, and he got a big chunk of it in one race just from pit strategy. But he was actually able to stay out in the lead on a late restart with older tires than a few really good drivers behind him. And it's been kind of encouraging to see him do that, but he's kind of done this thing recently where he'll take a different pit strategy than people, and you'll see him cheese out a few lead laps. It's nice if you play him in fantasy, but we haven't seen him dominate exactly. When we've seen him be in the lead, it's usually because he's doing something funky. It never has really worked his way up there. But we've just seen this recently with Blaney, where he got a pole. And, you know, he's a younger guy. We don't really know what to make of him. He's never had a pole before. And obviously, Jones has never had a pole before. But he's had plenty in the Xfinity Series. He's dominated plenty of races there. So it's not like he doesn't have any idea what to do. The problem with him is just the initial restart's going to be tough. He's got really good equipment, and his practice times are all really good. But Kyle Larson is an elite driver coming off of a win. And he's perhaps like a, well, he's right there in the top three of those three drivers that are just in a tier above everybody else this year, with Kyle Larson, Kyle Busch, and Martin Truex Jr. So I think his ownership will be around the 30% mark. You can go under or over with him. He's at $8,700, which is the most expensive he's ever been. He finished 17th here in the spring, but he actually raced a lot better than that. Kind of fell back at the end a little bit because his average running position was 8th place. Driver rating of 93, which is really good. It's just, it's going to be hard for him to just keep the lead with guys like Kyle Larson and Kenseth, Truex, Hamlin, all right behind him. We've just never seen it out of him. It's sort of just something that we're gonna learn this race for sure if this is what he's about. But he seems to do pretty good here. He'll have the first pit stall, which will help him throughout the course of the race, and he seems to be in really fast equipment, so he will get a bunch of lead laps, especially if he does beat Larson off of the initial restart. He'll collect a lot of fast laps and might hit value that way. But if you want to fade him completely, it's actually pretty safe. The chance of him leading a huge amount of laps is pretty unlikely, and he's going to fall back some, but we have seen him do really well recently, including last week where he looked really good. So maybe Jones could lead like 40, 50, 60 laps and end up doing good that way, but more than likely he's going to end up getting shuffled back just from cautions, pit strategy, and things like that. Right behind him, Kyle Larson, $10,500, 4-1 favorite to win. Well, he's not the favorite to win. He's just a touch behind. Kyle Busch is the favorite to win. But that was before qualifying. He's probably the odds-on favorite to win now. If Larson doesn't win just off the initial restart from the get-go, then the first, like, 10, 20 laps or so will be just him chasing down Jones. He's going to be in slightly better equipment. He had the second fastest lap in the final practice. He's had decent success at Bristol. He's crashed a few times, as you know, he's a pretty aggressive driver and he does that. Sixth here earlier in the year, three top tens total in his short career here. He's raced seven times here at Bristol. Has led a good amount of laps too. He led a lot of laps in the spring race here. Let's see exactly how many. He led 202 laps. So he dominated about a third of this race, over a third. So it's more likely than not that he will end up passing Jones either, well, somewhere between lap 1 and lap 50 or so. That sounds about right. Somewhere right before the first pit window comes into play. And honestly, things get so shuffled up at Bristol because it's such a crazy racetrack with high traffic. This field's going to get shaken up upside down, so place differential is very good here, despite the fact that there are 500 laps, and you'd think that domination would be the key to success here, but you can have some very big place differential moves, and we've seen that here in years past. Last year we saw Kenseth jump up from 22nd to 4th. We saw Matt DiBenedetto jump from 32nd to 19th. Paul Menard, 26th to 16th. And that landed those guys in the optimal lineup, even without dominating. It's just about getting the people who dominate, nailing those guys. So just having different combinations of the people up top is going to be mandatory if you want to win anything big this week. A few Hendrick drivers looking for success from the second row here. Casey Kane starting third at 7,400, and Chase Elliott starting fourth at 9,200. It's kind of an easy double fade. I know Kane used to be really good, like really good at Bristol, but he's just starting way too high here, and I don't see him passing Larson under almost any circumstance. And Elliott has been good at Bristol. He just hasn't really dominated at all. And he could. There's a chance. You do want some Elliott, but starting fourth and more likely than not, probably not going to lead any laps. I don't know if I can really go there. I love me some Chase, but his practice times are just okay. Nothing really stuck out about him. He just ended up qualifying well because qualifying was kind of funky this week. There's a huge difference between trim and race trim and qualifying trim this week. You heard a few drivers talking about after qualifying, like, huh, I thought I had a top 10, top 15 car in qualifying, but I ended up qualifying like 25th. You see that oftentimes at Bristol. It's just another reason that the field can get shaken up so much. It's weird qualifying, so I like Kane to go backwards here, so I'll avoid him. And Elliott, I won't avoid him completely, but I will avoid him for the most part. I think a lot of the field will too. Matt Kenseth and Martin Truex Jr. on the third row here, starting 5th and 6th. A couple Toyotas that are looking to be in really good spots. Kenseth was fastest in the second practice, 10-lap speeds. And Truex is just always good no matter where he goes now. He used to struggle quite mightily at Bristol. I've finished top 10 here earlier this year, and he's been doing it everywhere, even at tracks that he's been bad at. He's just been super good this year. There's basically almost no reason to ever not play Truex, no matter where he qualifies. It just doesn't really matter. He always ends up being in the top 5 and staying there pretty much all day long. $10,700, that is pricey, and you could roll the dice and see if he doesn't dominate at all, but chances are he's going to lead at least one lap, if not 100 laps. Truex just does it, and he gets more fast laps than anyone else. It seems like more often than not, he's going to win at least one stage each race. Like, if there were some Vegas odds on him winning a stage, it would probably be like minus 150 for him to win a stage in any given race. Like, he's just so good at nosing his way to the top, getting a bunch of lead and fast laps. He's led 600 more laps than Kyle Larson this year. Like Truex, but everyone's going to like Truex. You should always like Truex pretty much every week. Hamlin behind him, he was really fast in the first practice and slid into the 20s in his first, or in the second practice, because he was the fastest in first practice, second fastest in the 10 lap speed. He's had an up and down history here at Bristol, but he's had some good results. He knows his way around here. He's always good at pretty much any type of track, and he's in that good JGR equipment. Starting seventh, he's not going to be terribly popular. Still kind of expensive at $9,600, not cheap like we were used to getting him earlier in the year. He's just one of those guys you want to get a sprinkle of just in case he dominates, but there isn't really too much to say about him. Just kind of curious how his practice times fell off so much. And right behind him, Joey Logano at $9,000. Multiple winner here at Bristol in the last few years. He had just terrible practice times, just completely awful. 30th and 26th fastest in his practices. It's really bad for a track that he has finished top 10 at 4 years in a row, or four races in a row. He's been struggling, but Penske is very, very good at Bristol generally. So I like sprinkling him in there just with a lot of caution this week because of those practice times. We've got Bowyer starting in ninth at $8,900, or $8,800. Very expensive for him, but Bowyer is absolutely phenomenal at Bristol. He finished second here earlier this year, and his whole career is pretty much filled with him finishing top 10 at Bristol, because that's just what he does. He's awesome at short tracks, just in general. I think he's going to go under-owned, because in this $8,000 range, people are going to be drawn to the likes of like Blaney and obviously Eric Jones and Kurt Busch. So I think Bowyer is going to just kind of be in a bit of a dead zone. And then right behind him is Blaney. And people might just go with Blaney because, I mean, people are going to go with Blaney in a major way over Bowyer. Because he had the fastest second practice time and just starts a spot farther back than him. And there's nothing wrong with playing Blaney. I just think that he's going to be very popular. He's been highly owned the last few weeks, and he's getting really, really expensive to where he's kind of a little too expensive. And it's not like he has the greatest upside here. He's never done anything at Bristol. Starting 10th, I'd like him more starting 15th or so. So I'm going to go Bowyer over Blaney here, but if you want to go Blaney, that's fine. I mean, he was super fast in second practice. Another guy that's fast in practice, fastest 10-lap average in the first practice was Jamie McMurray, starting at $8,500, starting 11th. He's also has a very good track record here, just like Bowyer. Pretty much always finishes just in the lower part of the top 10, or right around there in the upper teens, year after year after year. His price has dropped a little bit from last week, but he's still kind of costly. But he's a little more viable this week, as he has actually dominated in the past here at Bristol. So I don't mind him at all. Again, he's going to be lower owned, sort of like Bowyer, just kind of in this $8,000 zone. Behind him, at $8,100, starting 12th, Daniel Suarez, another JGR racing car, getting more expensive. People are starting to own him more. The secret is definitely out with him. He was third fastest in the first practice 10 lap averages. He was just okay in the second practice, kind of backed up a little bit there. finished 18th here in the spring. I'm not excited about him like I would be at most other tracks. I mean, starting 12th is just a little bit too high for him. But he's been finishing, you know, he's had all these top 10 finishes in a row. And, you know, he seems a little, I guess, a little due. He was racing very well last week until he got knocked out there in the middle of the race. So Suarez is someone who's got a lot of momentum behind him. I just, again, wish he started a little bit farther back. And the guy that's been good to me, like really good to me the last few weeks, Ryan Newman, he's starting 13th. So no more starting like 30th for him and being pretty much a free play. Now he's starting a little bit too high. Has a good history here. Just doesn't really have much potential since he's not going to dominate anything, really. He did have the third fastest speed in final practice, and that's encouraging, so I'll be on him a little bit because of that, but I just can't go in too much on that because I do want some place differential if you're not going to be a dominator for me. Another guy that kind of matches that criteria for me, and I'm very mad they didn't qualify farther back, is Ricky Stenhouse Jr. He's starting 14th. He's seen incredible ownership week after week after week because of his wins that were very open to the public at Daytona and at Talladega. He's starting 14th, but like this is his best track, definitely. And he's been, year after year, he's shown that he's very good here. Five top 10 finishes in his last seven races. Second in this race here last year. And honestly, at 7,700, he's getting quite costly. He's definitely out of the $6,000 range, which he had been at for a while. So maybe a guy to kind of be off of just because he, again, is not going to dominate and he can't really go up a lot farther than he is. But he could definitely stay where he's at or just finish in the lower part of the top 10 and be an all right play. I just think he's going to be very popular. His track history is very much known by the public here. Everyone's going to be piling on to him. Starting 14th, just hope he runs into something and turns into Ricky Stenhouse again. And that'll be a really nice play there. So that's what I'm going to be hoping for. Chris Buescher has a rocket car right now, I guess. He was sixth fastest in final practice, which is just nuts for someone like Chris Buescher. He just re-signed to JTG to race next year. Maybe he's feeling comfortable there or something. This race last year, he actually finished fifth. Wrecked in the fall, but he's been looking really good. I really wish he didn't start 15th because he's had very low ownership week to week. And he's been racing very well and practicing like in the top 20. 12 fastest and the 10 lap averages too. I mean, he's sitting on a good car right now. And that's encouraging for AJ Allmendinger as well for me, his teammate. But we'll get to there later. Buescher just starting a little high for me to be too interested in, and it sucks. Maybe use him as a like super contrarian option. I just don't really see any upside unless he like pulls a Pocono or something. Austin Dillon at 7,500. He's starting 16th, and he has very good track history here. He's finished 13th or better in five of his seven races here at Bristol, so he can definitely move up. Even from starting 16th, he makes for a reasonably strong play. There are better plays with more place differential available in the $7,000 range, but Dillon does have a solid track history here. He just hasn't looked quite as good this year as he has in years past, but he does have that win for the playoffs, so he's not going to really have to race conservatively or whatever. He can do whatever he wants out there. One issue that I really do have with Austin Dillon is that right behind him are Keselowski and Kyle Busch, and they're just going to instantly move around him from the beginning of the race. So it's a little concern there. And let's talk about those guys, because these guys did not finish a race here last year. Neither of them did. And they've both underqualified considerably to how they usually do qualify. Keselowski has done well here at Bristol. He's just crashed a lot, and he's a pretty aggressive driver. He was a lot in the past, so it makes a lot of sense, but really just people just crash a lot in Bristol. That's just what happens with the close quarters and everything. Of these two, Keselowski is $700 cheaper, but Busch is obviously the better play. He's got the best car of anyone, and even though he's crashed the last three times he's tried at Bristol, you've got to look past that and hope that people look at that and care about that. I mean, it's just variance. It doesn't really matter. But if you look long term, he dominates Bristol. He's going to be top five within like 50 laps. You can pretty much guarantee that. He was top five for pretty much every practice, 10 lap, 1 lap. Top five, second fastest in 10 lap speeds in the second practice. You know he's going to do well. He's going to find his way into the top two or three and sit there toward the end of the race if he does not dominate, which I bet he does. He's going to dominate at least like a chunk of this race. Is he worth paying $10,800 for? And is he worth playing as the chalk? He's going to be pretty chalky because people are still going to be able to afford $10,800. No problem, really, with some plays towards the bottom here. But Kyle Busch, the choice is up to you. I'm going to kind of match the field and not think about it too much. I kind of like Keselowski a little better since he'll have much lower ownership. And I know his practice speeds were not good at all, but he's been racing a lot better. Really, the Fords and Penske have been doing better over the last few weeks, and they can get back to dominating here at Bristol, definitely. Maybe make them or pair them in some lineups with Logano and Blaney. That's probably a pretty smart strategy to have on a few lineups. A few guys we can kind of skip over, or just one guy we can skip over, David Ragan, starting 19th. He's starting way too high. I know he's had decent success at Bristol. This is way too high for him. Don't play him. Trevor Bain has very, very, very good track history here, and he was also 7th fastest in the final practice. He's starting 20th. People don't like him. He's been crashing and just doing bad things for people, but he's in a very good spot here. His last three times out, he's finished 11th, 12th, and 5th at Bristol. He obviously knows what he's doing. Even the year before that, he finished 15th. Dude's a beast here. Use him as a top value play. He's going to be popular, but starting 20th, it'll kind of cap his popularity, that and the fact that he's Trevor Bain and not a whole bunch of people are going to pile onto Trevor Bain. Can never really see that happening. But yeah, Bain's an awesome play. On 21st starting position, we've got Jimmy Johnson at $9,300. His practice times are good and everything. He just had a crappy qualifying like he likes to always do. He won this race in the spring. It's five top seven finishes in his last six races here, and historically Hendrick has always done excellently here at Bristol and any type of short track. Hendrick has had success, and honestly it's just a matter of time before Jimmy Johnson announces that he's going to the back for whatever reason. He's done that so much this year. He's never cared about qualifying, so as always he makes for a good place differential play, and he certainly has dominator upside here. Like it's Jimmy Johnson. He's the best driver of our generation, and it's a short track. He's like the best at short tracks. Don't overthink it. Play Jimmy Johnson and a large amount of your lineups, and it's gonna be hard to take him over Harvick, I know, or even over Kyle Busch, but I think that he's his ownership is not going to be as inflated as those guys, and he could easily win again. I could definitely see that coming from him. And he's just been under the radar, but he's been at tracks that he's not historically been the greatest at. And here he has historically been awesome. So hopefully he'll go under-owned. Maybe I'll be wrong and he's like 30-40%, but I reckon he doesn't break 30% this week. We'll see how that goes. Right after him, a guy that we've been used to rostering a lot with low qualifications, Ty Dillon. He's starting 22nd now, so now we kind of can't use him. I mean, we can use him still. He did finish 15th in the fall, or in the spring here. But starting 22nd, that's just a little high for me. And I know he is going to garner some ownership because people have been, you know, piling on to Ty Dillon, and he's been exceeding expectations. Now, that might be a reason to play him in the first place, so I don't really know. I can't pick him over Trevor Bayne, really. It's hard for me to justify that with Bayne's insane track history here and him being in a better car. But I don't know. Like, maybe Ty Dillon could, you know, he just has a knack for surviving. That's his thing. So I just wish that he had another qualification like usual, but he'd start becoming the real chalk. So maybe it's nice to have a week off of playing Ty Dillon. AJ Allmendinger, who I mentioned earlier with Chris Buescher's fast practices, he also posted a top 10 practice in the final practice there, but it was 30th overall in 10 lap speed, which was like right at the bottom, so that was kind of weird. I bet he just got loose or took like some garbage laps or something. I bet that's how that came about. I'm not huge on the 10 lap averages because of stuff like that, because usually there are very few tracks which you can actually get decent amounts of 10 lap averages, and even here at such a tiny track, you only get like 30 out of 40 drivers that even hit that mark, and most of them only hit it once, so you never even know what's going on there for the most part. But anyway, Allmendinger, or Dinger as we call him in the chat, he's had up and down success here. Ninth place finish at this race last year, but a lot of crashes too. He's been not so great this year, but if his team has something figured out with those speeds that they're putting up in practice, I don't know, I could see him maybe being a really, really nice sneaky play. Just if they do actually have something cooking there. I mean, 23rd, that starting position is, it's kind of right in the sneaky spot as far as the positional scoring summary shows. And it's also in a spot where he is not going to garner any sort of ownership. So I guess I kind of like him a lot. And I'm going to just hope that these practice times mean something and they weren't just hot laps. But that might be what it is, honestly. Kurt Busch is going to be popular this week at $8,400, going to a track he's historically done very well at. I do believe he's won four times here at Bristol, starting in the 25th position. Oh my gosh, I totally skipped over his teammate, I'm sorry. Danica Patrick, also starting in the 24th position. Don't play her, she's not good at Bristol. I was about to say she crashes more than everyone, but she's involved in accidents more than your average driver. I'll say that. But Kurt Busch is a lot more intriguing of a play. Starting 25th, he's been kind of good to us recently. We found him running in like the top three in the last few races. Maybe not finishing that way, but still kind of just doing sneaky good at very low ownership. So I like him for that. He makes a nice compliment if you're going to fade Jones. Michael McDowell starting 26th, just like last week at $5,900. It's pretty good. He has a good track history here. A few top 20 finishes here in the last few years. Nothing too crazy. So he's not going to be like an immaculate score. And that's one of the problems I have with value guys this week, is that I want you to start like dead last pretty much. If you're not going to give me any fast laps or domination laps, and what's so great about you moving up like 5, 10 spots? I want you to start in the back and gain like 20 spots or something. So that's why I'm not really on McDowell, but he's probably going to finish like 20th or something and do all right. Like, he'd probably be a good cash game play, honestly. But I'd just rather go more towards the back of the field. And as we move towards the back of the field here, we've got Paul Menard at $6,700, starting 27th. Pretty good track record here. Better than his average track, I'd say. Plenty of top 15 finishes in the last 3 or 4 years. Starting 27th, I like him. He did very well last week. And, you know, all he really needs to do is survive and just chill around where he's at, move up to like 20th or so. And he has a much better chance of doing that in an RCR car than someone like Michael McDowell has doing a Levi family racing car. Sorry to throw the shade there, Mike, but Menard just in better equipment, has a better history here. He's a kind of value play that I'm leaning on this week, even though, even after what he did to me last week, that man. Why'd you have to do that, Menard? That hurts so bad. But we've got to leave that in the past, and I will go back to you, Menard. And I will also go back to Almirola. He's been awesome since coming back from the injury. Maybe not like super awesome, but he's done well enough. He's done well at qualifying low enough for me to use. And he's also fended off any amount of large ownership. Just something I always have liked about Almirola. He's just always a guy that I'm playing because he always qualifies right around like 30th and finishes around 20th. That's kind of what we want out of value play, and at 6,300, that's a very fair price. He's finished 14th or better three times since 2014. In 2014, the spring race there, he actually finished third. So that's awesome, obviously. His practice times fell off from the first to second practice, so that's kind of concerning. But starting 28th, I think he'll be fine. Then right behind him, the play that everyone's going to be all over this week, Kevin Harvick starting 29th. Like, I thought it was just a joke lap that he put up, like he was warming his tires up or something, and then he just never took another lap, and there we go. His practice times are just eh. I mean, Harvick never cares about practice times. He's never going to, like, post the fastest practice. But it doesn't mean that he doesn't have a great car. He kind of hides his hand a lot. And this is a track that he won this race last year. In the spring, he finished third. In the fall race of 2015, finished second. Very, very, very good track record here. A pretty obvious play. You would only fade him if he crashes. So I'd go a little overweight on him for sure. But you'd have to go like 60% to do that. JJ Yaley starting 30th. No thank you. Then the biggest bait of this week, and this is crazy, Dale Earnhardt Jr. starting 31st. Will enough people pull the trigger? It seems like every time he baits us like this, he just finishes like dead last. Every time. And everyone is thinking the exact same thing too. He did crash at this track in the spring. But before that, the spring race of 2016, last time he had raced here before that, finished second. Ninth the time before that. So he can definitely do good here. His practice times were like really bad, like 27th and 28th. So there's something wrong with the car. So seriously, do not go overweight on Junior. He's a trap. Don't go like 70% on him like I did a few weeks ago. I know it's so tempting to at 31st. You just can't. He's got huge problems in his garage right now. Just it's always something every week, and I'm just kind of tired of going overweight on Dale because he really does just have something. Just he's got problems. He's like vocally upset about his car on Twitter and stuff. Just not the best look, Dale. I can't invest too much into that. A guy that helped me a lot in the spring race this year is Cole Witt, and he's starting 32nd. I finished 21st in the spring race. He was like, I think he was starting like in the lower 30s, and he was the value play, and he had done very well. He's actually finished 30th or better five out of his last six races here. So starting 32nd, you figure he'll move up a few spots, and at only $5,400, I mean, it's not a bad super punt. Only issue is some very slow practice times of 36th and 37th fast. So with him, you really got to hope he just survives, pretty much. Landon Castle starting 33rd. His track history is actually a little bit better than Witt. So I kind of like him, but he's also $300 more. Much better practice times, though, so I'm more inclined to use a Castle than a Witt. Just that, you know, that spring finish kind of makes me think about Witt a little bit more. And then my favorite play of the week of pretty much everyone on the board, Matt DiBenedetto, someone that we never care about, someone that's owned 1, 2% every week because he likes to qualify too high. If he's even good at all, even if he qualifies like 32nd, it's usually too high. But he qualified 34th, which is like, even for him, that's very low. And this is at his absolute best track. His last three finishes here have all been top 20. Finished 6th in the spring race in 2016. This is going to be a very hot pick. 34th and only $5,800. That is a steal. I'm not going to go all in, but I'm going to use him to the attrition rate, which is about a little bit over 25%. So I'll own him about 70%. And I know that's really bold, but he's not going to go over like 20 or 30% in ownership. And I really doubt he goes over 20%. I want to get that huge payout from playing him, you know, 70%. If he's looking almost like a lock to go up like 15 positions. So love DiBenedetto here. Really hope he doesn't crash. Please don't crash, Dib. He's usually pretty good to me. And he's actually been racing a lot better last few months than he had been throughout the course of the season. So onto the super scrubs here. We got Corey LaJoie, cheapest guy on the board, who finished 24th here in the spring. He's starting 35th. You can use him at absolute like bottom of the field. Nothing wrong with him there. BJ McLeod starting 36th. I wouldn't really use him. 4,900, a lot more expensive than LaJoie. Might as well just go LaJoie there. You know, he has the track history. BJ McLeod has never played here or never raced here before. Greg Galding at 4,700. He's starting to get really interesting. His practice times were all faster than LaJoie's. And he finished 29th here in the spring as well. He starts 37th. So he might be an even better punt than LaJoie. I think LaJoie will finish higher than him, but Galding will probably have more fantasy points, you know, starting a spot or a couple spots behind him. And then Jeffrey Earnhardt, who's finished 27th in the spring and 29th in this race last year and 32nd, the first time he raced here at Bristol in the spring race of 2016. So for a terrible scrub, that is not a bad track history. But his practice times are near the very back, starting 38th. It's really hard to see him do anything but survive, but that's what he's done the three times he's tried, so why not? But I still prefer Galding and LaJoie over him if you're really going to go this low and go under the likes of, like, Witt and DiBenedetto and stuff. To finish us out, Reed Sorensen at 5,300. I actually do not mind this play at all. He finished 28th and 27th. The last two times he's raced here, the spring race and then the fall race of last year, crashed in the spring race 2016, and then before that he finished 24th and 28th, but that was with different racing teams, so I don't really worry about his history too far back, because he's kind of bounced around. But if Sorensen finishes 27th again, that'll be a plus 12 place differential, which would be very, very good. That would come out to, 27 fantasy points, and that's really all you would need from a $5,300 guy. The worst thing about him is that his practice times were the worst of anyone in this field, so definitely watch out for him there. And then Joey Gay is starting last. His practice times are right down there with, like, Jeffrey Earnhardt and that, and he's never raced here before, so $5,000, you can't really justify using him unless... Yeah, but he would have to survive. That's the only reason you would play him. But it's not a complete ignore like most weeks where I'm telling you just ignore all these guys. You can play pretty much anyone this week. So that'll do it for the pod. I will see you guys next week and hope you all win a bunch of money. See ya.
Thank you for listening to the DFS Army Podcast. Join the DFS Army today and gain access to our private Slack chat, where you can chat with real DFS pros and coaches, as well as other DFS Army members with winning track records. Also included in your membership is access to our premium articles, DFS Army weighted projections for every sport we offer, from NFL to MMA. Weekly player picks and cheat sheets, the strategy vault of timeless concepts, and the DFS Army Domination Station, a truly state-of-the-art lineup optimizer offering your personal projections or ours. The DFS Army membership is the best value across the industry. Join today and get two free ebooks, as well as The Secrets to Unlocking a New Level to Your Game.